The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Recent outbreaks of preventable infectious diseases are raising questions about public health and the spread of misinformation. Misinformation spreads like a virus. We need to figure out ways to inoculate the public against misinformation, particularly when it comes to vaccinations. This year, measles cases hit a 25-year high in the United States. Locally, two cases had been confirmed by the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Vaccines are proven safe, and they are a tremendous benefit to public safety. But Texas is one of the states that has loosened its exemptions for vaccines. Is it time to close those loopholes? What do parents need to know about vaccines? How do local health officials address this public health concern? And what are local scientists doing to develop better immunity around the world? You can call in with your questions and comments as we talk about vaccines. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this hour with Dr. Anita Kurian. She is the Assistant Director for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Dr. Kurian, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
Also here today, we're joined by Dr. Charisse Allegrini. Dr. Roar Allegrini, and she's the San Antonio Program Director for the Immunization Partnership, and welcome.
Thank you.
And Dr. Joanne Turner is the Vice President for the Research at the Texas Biomed and is the Executive Director of the Vaccine Development Center here in San Antonio. Dr. Joanne Turner, hi.
Hi.
So, Dr. Kurian, why are we talking about vaccines? Wasn't measles conquered like 20 years ago?
Yeah, and that is the commonest misconception that we all have. Diseases have not been eradicated. All potential infectious diseases or potentially deadly infectious diseases have not been eradicated globally. We probably may have managed to eradicate some of the diseases here in our community, but those diseases still are causing illnesses and deaths elsewhere in other parts of the world. Take polio, for instance, or take measles, for instance, that you're talking about. We had eradicated here in the United States measles in 2000. We are seeing a resurgence of measles. Measles has come back into a community with a vengeance, and this year we have seen the highest number of cases that we've ever seen, like you said, in the past 25 years. And that is because measles, although has been was considered eradicated here, it is still highly prevalent and endemic in other parts of the world like Europe, Asia, and Africa. And most of the because of globalization, increased global travel, most of the diseases, I say always, is just a plane ride away. So it's like, think about it. You have a boat with a small leak and the boat fills up with water. You're frantically emptying the water. The boat becomes dry. Can you sit back and relax if you have not plugged the hole? You cannot, because you still haven't plugged the hole in the sense that you haven't eradicated these disease globally. So these disease can come back and take a strong foothold in our community. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when that happens. And we are seeing that with measles.
Dr. Charisse Roar Allegrini, tell us more about the Immunization Partnership.
So our work at the Immunization Partnership is to create a Texas free of vaccine-preventable diseases. We do that through education at both the community level and the provider level. A lot of providers don't know how to talk to their patients about vaccines. And parents they have questions, and that's completely understandable. I'm a parent of children that are school age now. I have a lot of questions I ask my doctor. I want to make sure the doctor can answer me appropriately. So we help to educate providers. We also work with the state legislature to make sure that they have an understanding of the science behind vaccines so that they can affect good vaccine policy.
So your job is to communicate?
It's a combination of communication, education, and supportive best practices. So best practices is working with clinics to promote sound systems within their clinic, making sure that they're reporting to MTRAC, which is the state database. That's extremely important because when we do have an outbreak, we need to go to MTRAC to find out who's vaccinated. And so we need those records kept up to date. And even though physicians are supposed to keep them up to date. Often they don't. They just get behind on it. So we work with clinics to try to improve that. We also work with clinics to improve their outreach. There's something called reminder recall. A patient is overdue for their booster or their next vaccine, and life gets busy and they don't come in. So we kind of help their systems so that they're better, the clinic is better at reaching out to those patients to bring them back in so that they can get their vaccines on time.
And Dr. Joanne Turner, the Vaccine Development Center of San Antonio, vaccines are continuing to be refined?
Yeah, they absolutely are. And let me explain what the Vaccine Center is. So it's a collaborative across four of our institutions, Southwest Research Institute, Texas Biomed, UTSA, and UT Health. So the four institutions come together and we promote vaccine research, either through giving pilot awards or we run a conference every year that is open to all of our scientific community here. And then our third endeavor is to be more involved in outreach to the public, and that's an area that this year we certainly want to take on more with our partners.
So what are some of the areas that y'all are focused on?
There are many infectious diseases that are currently under research. Some are new and emerging. There are vaccines being developed and used in humans for Ebola, for example. We have great, amazingly problematic outbreaks in countries that are susceptible to Ebola. Locally here, our institute are studying two vaccines, one's on tuberculosis. So we are trying to improve a vaccine that works in people but doesn't work very effectively, and using new technologies to understand what's wrong with that vaccine and to improve it. And those are currently in animal model testing. Texas Biomed, we're also studying HIV vaccines to try and make a vaccine for that infectious disease. And really every infection that's out there, we're either looking at new vaccines or we're trying to improve the vaccines that we currently have so that they work more effectively.
So when people are talking about vaccines and their concerns, and actually there are a lot of vaccines that are currently being used and yes, some are in development, and does that hurt the overall research when there is a level of mistrust in the community about vaccinations in general?
It's challenging as a scientist, which is what I am. So when the public doesn't believe what we're doing has value, that makes it very hard to go to the lab and continue really working hard to improve human health. We spend a lot of our time and energy really working hard to develop new or improved vaccines. And then when we introduce those to the public and there's skepticism, I think that's very challenging. We're not really in it for the money, we're in it for public health. And so I think that's an important part for people to understand. The scientists at the bench are truly using taxpayers' money to do their research and working on things that are of public importance, and we're doing it because we personally want to improve human health.
But you're talking about some very exotic and some very scary-sounding diseases like Ebola, but also and HIV, but also we're still talking about the vaccine we get every year for the flu, which is actually pretty scary, and measles and rubella and so many other things. And those diseases are just as significant.
Right. And we have vaccines that work for many of those infectious diseases. We just need to administer them and get those out to the whole community. And then we have others that we're working on. So the flu vaccine is challenging because the flu changes every year. And so that one's just been difficult. We need a universal flu vaccine. There's lots of research going on to develop that. It's a very challenging virus to work with.
What questions do you have about vaccinations? We've got three experts in the studio today. Give them your best shot and with the question, and I'm sure they'll be able to give you a pretty good answer. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Why do you think there is so much mistrust about vaccinations in our community, and why do you think people are very reluctant to take a good look at the science, which is pretty rock solid? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Dave. Data suggests that in the last 16 years, since Texas loosened its exemption system for vaccinations, the number of families taking advantage of that exemption has grown dramatically. The state tracks how many requests for affidavits it receives each year, though some forms have never submitted. In the 2004 fiscal year, Texas received vaccination exemptions request of 7,250 individuals. By 2018, that number has grown by tenfold to 76,665 individuals. More and more people are seeking ways to avoid getting having their children vaccinated, and that is a public health concern because without community immunity, we leave many people vulnerable to outbreaks and who are unable to fend off these diseases themselves and actually are not really capable of being vaccinated because they are very too young or they're already their health system is already compromised and they're not really ideal for vaccination. So we put a lot of people at risk when we don't have general vaccination. If you have a question or a comment, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Tim is on the line. Tim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I have a question for Dr. Terry. I, first of all, believe in the importance of vaccines. But I was wondering if you could cite some specific articles comparing rates of chronic illness, including autism, based upon populations that are vaccinated versus those who aren't vaccinated. And second of all, just anecdotally, I'm just wondering if you know if there are any studies based on like epigenetics and people's reactions to vaccines based upon their genetic profile.
All right, Tim, thank you for that question. So do we have a control population where we have people who are like a vast number of people who are not vaccinated and we're able to compare health outcomes to populations that have been vaccinated, Dr. Sherry?
We have looked at, there's many, many studies. I'm not going to cite just one because there's so many and I'm happy to provide a list. And by many, I mean hundreds worldwide, where they've looked at people with autism who are vaccinated and not vaccinated. And we've found overwhelmingly that there's not a correlation between those vaccinated and those not vaccinated for autism. We don't know what causes autism, and we really need to put some effort into trying to understand the causes of autism so we can deal with it better. But we know definitively that there's no relationship between vaccines and autism. There's so many studies across the world.
I just want to point out about two important studies that folks need to visit those studies. One is the Institute of Medicine report that was published very recently about the association between autism and MMR, and they did not find any association, neither could they replicate the findings that were published in that fraudulent study that was done in 1998. The other most important study that folks need to look at is the 2013 CDC research study, where again they looked at autism and MMR association and did not find that link.
Clearly, on his face, a ridiculous claim that vaccinations cause autism. And because if that were true, then that would somehow would be able to help figure out like what might be causing autism. And no one has ever really been able to figure that out. And that would seem to be like something very important that if we're able to unlock that, that would be something that medical science would deeply, deeply care about. And as a researcher, Dr. Joanne Turner, I mean, you would be like, how do we fix this? And rather than deny, as the anti-vaccination community alleges is going on here, there would be deep attempts to try to repair and correct.
Absolutely. And I think we've spent a lot of money studying and refuting that study by Andrew Wakefield. I think it's important to understand how science works. It's an iterative process. So a study can come out with a very small group size, which was the Wakefield paper, and make a claim. And then science subsequently retests and retests and retests. Everything that we're researching on, we retest. And
that's
it stands
to be able
the
to
test
duplicate. Under
More
the...
than duplicate, yes. So multiple times we have not ever been able to prove the Wakefield study again. And it's kind of to put in a different parallel. I could make a claim really easily that vacuum cleaning causes earthquakes, right? There's enough instances of someone doing vacuuming and there's an earthquake in the world.
You can come up with anecdotal stories.
Right.
He turned on the vacuum cleaner and suddenly the earth began to shake.
Exactly. But when we look over thousands and thousands of individuals, we realize that that actually doesn't happen. People vacuum, there's no earthquake. And so that's what's happening in science. They've repeated that study over and over again with bigger sample size, where they really get statistical power to prove that that study was incorrect.
And then we have so many people who get vaccinated and then they don't have autism.
Correct.
How are you able to distinguish between someone who did get it and who didn't? And is there any kind of explanation offered?
Right, and often vaccines are given at that time of age where autism would begin, and so it just happens to be at the same time, and so then people would attribute it to the vaccine.
Right, but we're kind of dealing with the lunatic information system here, where people take information and it's twisted around, and it's not about reasoning. It seems to be about something else entirely, Dr. Charisse. And this is an emotional issue.
It is an emotional issue. And when you think of a new parent who's nervous for the first time with their child, they want to do everything they can to protect them. And they hear a story from a friend whose friend's child had autism.
Yeah, the guy that I parked next to at the mall, right. his next-door neighbor's cousin, somehow this thing happened.
Exactly. Or they have a seizure, or they have something else, and the individual doesn't know the science behind it, doesn't know how to relate to it. And frankly, our job as public health professionals is to explain to folks and ask their questions and take their questions seriously. You know, as a mom, I want somebody to explain to me. We've got folks on the extreme that don't want to hear about it. But the vast majority of people that are swayed by these stories are just what we call vaccine hesitant. They want to do what's best for their families, and they haven't been getting good information. And that's our responsibility in public health, is to make sure that we put out the information that they need to get to make the right choices.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the phones, 210-614-8980. If you've got a question or a comment, the vaccinations, give us a call. Here's Justin. Justin, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. And thank you to the guests for doing the work that you do. And, I do believe, I think a lot of people do believe that you do it because, like you're saying, that it's about the public and it's about that you care. But I think it should also be recognized that the other side is not only celebrities pushing an agenda. There are also people on the other side that do believe, you know, against vaccinations or more information on vaccinations and have legitimate reasons why. And my particular question actually was not so much about the autism, but studies that I've read about autoimmunity and the general effect, if any, if vaccinations toward the immunity of the human species on the planet, fighting antibiotics, fighting, you know, the foods we eat and that kind of thing.
All right, Justin, thank you for that. So are we weakening our overall immunity system, you know, because if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. So, but then that's the idea, or it can mess you up pretty bad. So are we, you know, should we not wash our hands like the host on Fox News and say, because I want my immune system to be, you know, Chuck Bronson tough, you know? So how does that work? Dr. Kurian, you get the tough one.
The way immunity works, I just want to take a minute to explain this. So you get a disease, your body reacts to the disease by putting forth antibodies in response to fight off the infection. That's how the natural disease progression and the development of immunity works. What vaccines do is sort of imitate the natural infection. So you're not really getting the natural infection. And so you're not also, people have to remember this, if you don't get the natural infection, you're also saving yourself from these potentially deadly complications of those natural infections. So vaccines are sort of imitating the natural infections, tricking your body to generate those antibodies, those immune responses to fight off those infections, and they also are saving you from those deadly, potentially deadly, serious complications that can be either short-term or, for some instances, long-term complications.
But you're not cheating your immune system out of being able to, actually, you're making it stronger.
Yes, I believe so. That's the general belief of the public health community and as well as the academic
That's what science
research.
Tells us.
That's what science tells us. And yeah, these anecdotal, you know, I always say anecdotes, emotional anecdotes always trump science. And there is no fighting cherry picking this data, which only inspires further frustration among the general community. So it's important to remember vaccines do not weaken your immune system. In fact, they're designed to trigger an immune system that could last longer.
Okay, there's another caller, Rafael. Rafael, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And I'd like to thank your guests. I have a master's in immunology from UT Health, and I actually attended the vaccine development conference a few years ago. I thought it was a great, great experience. So thankful. Thank you for what you do. So my question is, have there been or will there be any changes to the schedule for vaccines that newborns and young children will receive as a result of any of this recent outcry against vaccines?
All right, Raphael. So the complaint is that we're giving too many vaccinations too quickly, and there have been some people presenting alternative schedules, not really based upon science, but upon what makes people feel good. And so, Dr. Anita Kurian.
The current immunization guidelines is still the ACIP recommended guidelines. So we do not, we strongly discourage you choosing the alternate strategy or the delayed dose strategies. And I want to take a minute to debunk that myth that giving too many vaccines all at once is going to cause an overload of immune response too, which is not true. So if a child receives all the vaccinations, all the recommended vaccinations by the age of two, the child is exposed to 315 antigenic or immunological components, which is far less than what the child is routinely exposed to in every day.
Just going into the ball pit at McDonald's.
Yes, exactly. Or just take your body. Even if you take a daily shower, it's been estimated that your skin harbors about 10 to the power of 14 microbes or antigens, and each of these microbes have about 3,000 to 6,000 antigens. So getting all those recommended vaccines by the age of two, you're only exposed to 315 antigens as opposed to 3,000 to 6,000 to hundreds and thousands of antigenic component that you're routinely exposed to.
So you're saying, just because you're throwing a lot of numbers out there, and so I want to break it down here, that compared to all of the bombardment we get day to day with the different types of viruses and things that are all around us all the time, that the number of antigens we're being exposed to through the vaccinations
is pretty minuscule.
It's not that big a deal.
Yes.
Let me add to that. When it's become very popular to delay vaccines, or people will say, I'm not anti-vaccine, I'm still vaccinating, but on a different schedule. Well, when you're not vaccinating, you're putting your child at risk. So the studies that are done on safety look at the combined vaccines at a certain age group, and we balance it out by when is it safest to give it and when is the highest risk of exposure. And so we know what that is, and that's why the recommendations have the schedule that they have. If you choose to delay a vaccine that you should get at one, until say 4 or 5 years old, now that child has been at risk for the last 4 or 5 years, and we're seeing that happen quite a lot with measles and other childhood diseases.
And to add to that, that different schedule has not been tested for safety in the same way experimentally.
Absolutely. So exactly.
Absolutely. There's a risk there.
Absolutely. Right. The other argument that we often hear in public health world is that babies up to the 1 year of age have immunity that's conferred from the mother, that the mother passes on the immunity to the child, which is not entirely true, because the immunity that's passed on from the mother to the baby wanes as with months and doesn't exceed more than 1 year of age. And then the mother does not confer immunity against all potentially deadly infectious diseases that the vaccines do. Your most common pneumococcal, strep pneumo infections, there is no immunity conferred, maternal immunity that's passed on from the mother to the baby. It has to come through the vaccination at that recommended.
Because if it were, then we wouldn't need vaccinations, right?
Exactly.
But we do. All right, so we're talking about vaccines. What are some of the myths? Let's do some myth busting here on The Source this afternoon. If you've got a question or comment, the number is 210-614-8980. If you've been to the Metro Health Immunization Clinic, how'd that go? Do you rely on your doctor for information about vaccines? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. What about adults? Do we still need some boosters, maybe for measles, now that that could be passed around? I don't know. My doctor says I need to go get one. I'm going to go do that. 210-614-8980. We'll be right back.
History class to many students means memorizing names, dates, and battles. Students who visited sites where those names, battles, and dates made history come away with a different perspective.
Standing there and hearing the stories is way different than just reading about it on a piece of paper.
Next time on Fronteras, San Antonio students and their professor hit the road to take a critical view of history. download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. According to the World Health Organization, reluctance or refusal to vaccinate is now one of the top 10 major threats to global health. One manifestation of this is that even people in high-income countries, like here in Texas, with good health care systems, are dying from easily preventable diseases. More than 70 people died of measles across Europe in 2018. And three of them in France. France is one of the leading countries where people are reluctant to vaccinate their children. Why is that? How come that is spreading here to Texas? What questions do you have about vaccinations? What are the myths that we need to clear up? How do you think that we could do a better job of communicating to people the importance of being of getting vaccines for the children? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So, Dr. Charisse Roy-Allegrini, can you talk more? You're with the Immunization Partnership. How do we do a better job of communicating to people? I mean, this is about information, misinformation, and trust.
Right. So I'm a scientist, and I spend a lot of time in science communication. First is listening. For a very long time in public health, we had a tendency to shut people down. We thought the people that didn't want to vaccinate were just a fringe element, crazy people that didn't understand. Most people that are choosing not to vaccinate are just concerned parents. So listening to them, understanding their questions, and giving them factual information. A study was done that looked at hesitant parents and who they were more likely to believe, the pro-vaccine or the anti-vaccine. And what they found was that the language used by the scientists was simplified so much that people felt like they were being treated like children, whereas the anti-vaccine community was using scientific language, which might not have been accurate. Often the terms are used incorrectly, but they were using scientific terms that were targeted to a slightly more educated population, at least a college-educated or high school-educated population. And so the average parent was turning towards them because they felt like they were being treated with respect. So we have to change how we communicate to people. The average anti-vaxxer is a relatively affluent, white, college-educated or high school-educated individual. So recognizing that, we need to target our language to that population.
But there also seems to be this growth in antitrust. People don't trust big institutions. They don't trust big pharma. They don't trust big government. And this seems to be a byproduct of all of that lack of trust, you know. So how do we deal with that?
Well, absolutely. A lot of people want to stick it to the man. You know, big pharma is the evil ones taking all of our money.
Yeah, they're jacking up the price on insulin right. And, you know, all these terrible things.
And what we talked about earlier is, you know, scientists are developing these vaccines not to make money, but to save lives. Very little profit is made off of vaccines. In fact, many companies wouldn't make them if we didn't make it easier for them to at least call an even outcome, because they would lose money on vaccines. So big pharma is not doing it to line their pockets. Certainly we in public health aren't seeing any of the profits from it. But it's trying to communicate that to folks, letting them understand that this really is about protecting lives. It's not about making money.
And Dr. Joanne Turner, can you talk, you're with the Vaccine Development Center of San Antonio. Can you talk about how much work goes into with, like, say, the Food and Drug Administration to make sure that vaccines are inspected, they're created in a very specific, highly regimented kind of way to make sure that they are safe?
Yes. Initially, it starts in a lab of a researcher with a good idea, and they would develop a product, and then that product is just a lab product. They have to then validate that. So they would be asked to test it through a variety of animal models so that we are as close as we can get to humans. And then they would have to do that in a regulated way. So there's abundant documentation that tells, really looks at exactly what was done, how it was done, whether it's safe and effective. We have to test safety, toxicity of a vaccine to make sure it's not causing any adverse effects. And then all of that gets filed with the FDA. So these are called good lab practice or regulated studies. And the FDA will evaluate that very, very carefully. They may ask for more studies to be done in a different animal model or an early clinical trial in humans. To make sure that everything is really working as we said it was in the lab. And then it would go through to good manufacturing where the products would be made safely to give to humans. So it's an extensive project. It could take 10 years, it could take 20 years, depending on the type of vaccine, to get out to the public.
Got a comment from Mike. Are there any potentially dangerous preservatives in vaccines? What are the ingredients?
I think it varies per vaccine.
We've heard complaints about mercury. They took mercury out, and now they say there's aluminum in there.
The amounts that are in the vaccines are less than you would be exposed to in the environment for just about all of these. The potential danger is if you have much, much more than what we actually put in vaccines. It's a tiny amount, and it's necessary for the safety of the vaccine so that the vaccine doesn't become contaminated. But you are more likely to be exposed to mercury in the environment than you are. Well, now we don't have it in vaccines, but to any of the other things that people are concerned about, you're not going to get sick from those preservatives in the vaccines.
And that goes to, so the mercury was in there, and because of the hoopla that was raised by the anti-vaccination community claiming it was unsafe, it was removed. And but still the complaints, is that right?
No, it was removed by FDA in between 1999 to 2001 as a precautionary. That had nothing to do with the anti-vaccines campaign or the voices of them. It was just as a precautionary. Measure was removed to avoid any mercury buildup or exposure to mercury among children. But the other thing I want to point out, this is again the biggest myth, the thimerosal, which is the preservative used, the mercury-based preservative used, like Sherry's pointed out, there are two types of mercury, methyl mercury and ethyl mercury. It's the ethyl mercury that is incorporated in the thimerosal, which is not absorbed by the body, readily excreted by the body. Methyl mercury is what we need to be concerned about, which gets accumulated in the body and over a time frame can deposit in your cells and tissues. And methyl mercury, we are exposed to methyl mercury every single day. It's present in our Earth's crust, it's soil, water, in the food we eat, breast milk, soy milk products, all of these have methyl mercury, which is not the component that is incorporated in the vaccine per se. And yes, it was removed in 2001 from all vaccines except for flu vaccine. We do have multi-dose flu vaccines that still have thimerosal, but you can always request to have a single-dose flu vaccine being administered to you.
Okay, let me go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Carl. And Carl, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. I think that the debate would be aided by some clarification from your guest about the extraordinarily low risk of vaccines compared to the very real and a little higher risk of overuse of antibiotics. And I've talked to people who conflate those issues simply because they both do deal with immune response and feel like, well, if overuse of antibiotics is a problem, then vaccines must be a problem. I think it extends even to hand washing. People tend to exaggerate those effects and misunderstand the impacts and the risks.
All right, Carl, thank you for that question. So people making that comparison, it's two completely different things, but it just shows you people will conflate medical issues and try to reach conclusions that aren't substantiated through research and science. Dr. Charisse?
Right. Yeah, I would say those two are not related. Antibiotic overuse is absolutely concerned because by the way we use antibiotics, without going into too much detail, we allow for selective mutations to occur in the bacterium, and then that bacterium becomes resistant to the antibiotics and we don't have anything to treat a bacterial infection if that's the case. But with vaccines, we are preventing the infection from developing in the body. So they're completely unrelated, and I think that's important to understand. Antibiotic overuse is absolutely a thing that we need to pay attention to. It's critical. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't use antibiotics. It means that we need to use them properly.
Even just having this conversation, trying to explain that vaccinations are safe and that the anti-vaccination community has a lot of misinformation, that's just overall, this conversation is actually negative for the overall opportunity to move because people are only going to hear, why are they talking about it? Something must be wrong. You know, we have to identify that this conversation can actually in itself have a negative effect.
Let me add to that, though. For a long time, we didn't talk about it. When Wakefield's paper came out, we kind of ignored it. At least in the science community and public health community, we just kept pushing that to the fringe. Because we ignored it for so long, it's become a problem. So I think it is important for us to respond. We have an anti-vaccine community in Texas that's gotten very loud and very influential in the state government. So we've responded with a grassroots pro-vaccine organization called Immunize Texas that is working with the state legislature to counterbalance that, because for too long we pretended that problem didn't exist, and so now we have to address it and take it head on. So having a forum like this with three experts is an excellent opportunity to communicate to the public the importance of vaccines.
In the recent legislative session, there were efforts trying to close loopholes where these exemptions were given too freely, and it really didn't get off the ground.
I would say it was a neutral result at the end. There were also efforts by the anti-vaccine groups to promote very bad bills. We worked very hard to make sure those didn't go anywhere. It was a difficult legislative session overall. I think anybody involved would agree with that. So yes, we tried to close loopholes and we didn't get anywhere. And that was purely due to politics, not because of science.
Got an email from Madi. This is a very important topic. My 16-year-old has autism. He was formally diagnosed when he was 18 months. He has had all of his vaccines. Vaccines did not cause his autism, but vaccines did protect him from deadly viruses. We would do it all over again. If you've got a question or a comment about vaccinations, we'd love to hear from you. If you heard some of the anti-vaccination stories and their messaging, and if it has appealed to you, and why do you think these things have such a resonance? Why do you think that people were able to listen to that, even though the science is telling us that vaccinations are safe and that they're critical for public health? What's not connecting? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about vaccinations and how important they are for our public health. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Jeff is on the line. And hi, Jeff. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Longtime listener, first-time caller. I want to say this is a great conversation to have, and that I believe there's a lot of discussion about this right now because of a perceived lack of trust of vaccine manufacturers, as well as a lack of trust of the government, can be seen as well as like with climate change. Like there's a distrust of the science. So even if you present an anti-vaxxer with science, they're going to go back to their Facebook echo chamber and they're going to argue that, oh no, that's a bunch of lies brought on by manufacturers to make lots of money. And to be fair, there are a lot of manufacturers and big corporations that are misusing our trust to make lots of money. I can point to the Volkswagen scandal recently as a large corporation using their trust with people to lie to make a lot of money to circumvent laws and rules.
Jeff, thank you much for that call. I'm gonna go straight to another caller because we have a lot here. Evan, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Perfect. I had a question as to why it is we're not pushing for mandatory vaccinations in respect for public health. As I see, I live here in San Antonio, and I could not count the many times people in my own community were telling me they didn't want, autism was caused by the vaccinations, and I couldn't even use scientific terms or simple terms to simply point out the fact that that wasn't true. So to avoid this case of trying to convince people that they should do it and then have seven people die because someone didn't get vaccinated, why don't we just vaccinate people as mandatory, as a mandatory thing for health?
Good question, Evan. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to Dr. Anita Kurian, the Assistant Director for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. What are the rules now? And can we have, it says, okay, everyone has to be vaccinated.
Well, Right now, the child, all the vaccinations are ACIP recommended vaccines. As far as making those mandatory, I think we do have child entering kindergarten to 12th grade is required to have certain vaccines, about 10 vaccines. Children entering the 7th grade are required to have that one booster dose of Tdap. So there is...
Meningitis too.
Yes, meningococcal meningitis too. So there are some components of, you know, making these vaccinations
mandatory.
So if
you want to enter into the public school system,
exactly,
you have to have
had these vaccines.
But if you're going to homeschool,
And in Texas, you can get an exemption.
Exemptions.
So you
too.
Are required, but you file an exemption, which is extremely easy to get.
And all you have to do is say, I have an objection, right? You don't really have to go into a lot of detail.
You don't even have to see a doctor. You have to get it notarized. That's all.
Yeah. And we've seen the explosion in the number of people who are getting these exemptions.
Are exponentially increasing with each year. So, and I strongly feel all the backlash that we are seeing now is probably the backlash from those mandatory vaccination campaigns against smallpox in the 1920s, 1940s, 1960s. There was a mass mandatory vaccination campaign for measles. So
I remember lining up when I was a little kid to get the polio cube, sugar cube, and this is in the 60s. That's how old I am. And it was a long line. You know, it was people. It was a big deal get that polio vaccine.
But I think some of that comes from people seeing polio firsthand. They saw children suffering from polio, and then it made it much easier to go and get a vaccine. And I think now we don't see so much because the vaccines have been successful. People have forgotten what it means to actually have measles, for example, and what that means to be sick and have long-term disability potentially.
We are
that.
Victims of our own success. This is the vaccine paradox, classic vaccine paradox, which is we've come up with vaccines that are so effective and managed to precipitously drop the rates of potentially deadly infectious disease. And we've not just managed to do that, but we've, like Dr. Turner was saying, we've also managed to wipe the memory of this disease from young parents.
So, but here we have these outbreaks now of measles, particularly in these pockets of high density of communities, of people who are reluctant to be vaccinated. And why isn't that going to be the reminder, or is it the reminder, we've got to wake up, and measles is a serious, highly contagious, infectious disease that is 100% preventable, and there is no upside to not being vaccinated. Is that going to be the alarm, or are we going to hit the snooze bar on that?
We've seen a response to that after the Disneyland outbreak a few years ago. So California now has very, very stringent laws, and there's a backlash against that. Texas is not going there yet. It's just not the political climate for it. I don't think there's a legislator that wants to push for that now. We had one a couple of years ago, and he lost his seat. So that's the reality of the climate. It's determined by state law. It's not a federal thing. So we need to convince our legislature to move towards that. But for now, what we want to focus on is tightening up the loopholes, making sure everybody that can get vaccinated does get vaccinated, that they're not in public spaces, and especially addressing access to care issues. So making sure that kids who want to get vaccinated but haven't been able to get to the clinic are able to get to the clinic. So we're just trying to tighten it up as much as we can. What we're seeing is in other states where they're passing new laws on mandatory vaccination, the anti-vaxxers are saying, come to Texas. And so we're going to have a surge. And so we are working on that, but we're not there yet.
So I have a tweet from Lauren. As a mother of an innocent child who is immunocompromised because of chemo to treat cancer, this terrifies me, in all caps. So we have children who cannot be vaccinated because they are being treated for childhood cancer and other issues. They are dependent upon the community immunity, you know. So how does that work, Dr. Anita Kurian?
So, but when you're vaccinated, your risk of contracting an infection is much lower or negligible, and thereby your risk of transmitting that illness becomes zero as well. And when you have sufficient number of folks in the community vaccinated against a certain disease, the further spread of that disease within that community is limited. And indirectly, when this happens, indirectly, you're protecting that unvaccinated segment of population as well from getting this infection. This is the whole principle of this herd immunity, which you refer to as community immunity. But in order for this to be effective, we should have large number of, there is a threshold for every infectious disease, and that threshold depends upon the condition itself. We should have large number of folks vaccinated in the community in order for this to work effectively.
So a measles outbreak, is highly contagious. It can last like 2 hours in a room. Someone who is measles infected can walk in a room and walk out, and that's a hot room for 2 hours. Then if that child who has this immunization compromised comes into that contact with that room, that could be a fatal occurrence for that child. And so we have to think about that, right?
Exactly. And that's what we talk about all the time. It's extremely important. You're not protecting just yourself and your own child. You're protecting all the children around you. And in turn, your child is being protected because everybody else is being vaccinated. So that is our concern. Immunocompromise from cancer and other diseases, but also children too young to get vaccinated. So an infant less than 1 year old doesn't have the measles vaccine yet. You're protecting that child as well.
Most parents ask this question, why should I vaccinate my child so my neighbor's child is safe? I think we need to change the tone of the national debate. It should be from, we need to turn around and ask, what gives your child to get that infection and then transmit it to my child?
People real quickly think that measles is just a harmless childhood disease, that if I get this, it's not going to be that big of a deal. I mean, how big of a deal is measles, Dr. Kurian?
It can cause serious complications in the very young and the old. It can cause pneumonia. It can cause brain damage. It can cause otitis, deafness, and about 1 in 3 child per 1,000 population. It can cause death as well.
Why was it so bad in Madagascar? I mean, I heard like they had like hundreds of people die of measles there. In some communities or certain areas, it goes untreated. They don't have the resources.
Lack of infrastructure to address it promptly in a timely manner.
We often hear that measles isn't such a big deal and that people died 40 years ago because of lack of access to health care. And that's true. Our health care is better now. But really, I don't want my child to spend 2 weeks in ICU. The emotional, financial, physical toll that takes on all of us is huge. And they might survive, but still be at risk of complications in the future. So you're more likely to survive any illness that you get today than you might have 40 years ago, or if you're in a country with limited resources like Madagascar or some other folks in some other places in Africa or South
America.
And
we really don't know what the long-term consequences of some of the infections that we receive, that whether or not when you reach adulthood or late in life, it could result in more neurological complications. There's a lot of mysteries that
measles is known to cause something called subacute panencephalitis, which is a long-term sequelae resulting in brain damage. So it does have potentially deadly complications. And I say to parents, if you choose not to vaccinate your child, you're just choosing to take a different and a much greater risk.
So really what we've been trying to do here is not shame people who have a different opinion, trying to keep the lines of communication open to talk to them about the science, trying to figure out what can we do to help them understand and look at the science, and are we going to be able to do that? Sherry, you've been really good about talking to this. How do we mend this miscommunication?
Again, just keeping the lines of communication open. It can be really hard to talk to somebody who's just staunchly opposed. It's not so much an opinion, it's a sense of understanding. And so always keeping that door open is important to have a conversation.
All right, that's Dr. Charisse Rohr Allegrini. And she is the San Antonio Program Director for the Immunization Partnership. Also with us is Dr. Anita Kurian. She is the Assistant Director for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And Dr. Joanne Turner has been with us. She's the Vice President for Research at Texas Biomed, Executive Director of the Vaccine Development Center for San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.